Item three, presentation by Siegel Consulting on the December 31, 2014 GASB 67 evaluation. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is John Monroe. I'm from Siegel Consulting. Here today presenting information on the Governmental County Standards 67 actual evaluation. You notice Paul's not here, so I can get in a few more words today. So that's good.
I'm going to tell him.
You do have a sense of humor.
This is being recorded.
I think he already knows it, but yeah. So a few years ago, we presented some information to the board about two new statements approved by the Governmental Accounting Standards Board, or GASB, as you may have heard them referred to. These new statements affect the reporting of pension liabilities for accounting purposes. Statement 67 is for plan reporting, and that's effective with the year ended December 31st, 2014. And there's another statement, 68, that is effective with the fiscal year, and that's ending June 30, 2015, and that's for the employer financial reporting. Now, what we're talking about today mainly is pension plan financial reporting. And it's information that's going to be put in your CAFR, which we'll be talking about, I think, the next item. And it's nothing to do with funding. When we come back next month, we'll present the annual funding valuation that determines the contribution rates and so on, just like we always have. So, but what we're talking about today is financial reporting. These numbers will go in the pension plan's financial statements, and then there's also a bunch of numbers we'll calculate that will go into each employer's financial statements. So we just need to separate it from the other annual valuation that we do each year that separates contribution rates. Now, fortunately, some of the decisions that GASB made allowed us to use the same cost method, the entry age cost method, for valuing the liabilities, and also we're able to use the 7.25 long-term earnings rate as our discount rate in this valuation. So many of the numbers that you'll see, they are generally consistent with measures that are shown in the annual funding valuation. For example, there's something called total pension liability, or TPL. That's the GASB term now, but that's very similar to the actuarial accrued liability in the annual valuation. There's a service cost, that's GASB's term. That's just basically what we've been calling the normal cost in the funding valuation. So there's different terms in the financial reporting world, but they're very similar to some of the terms that you're already familiar with from the annual funding valuation. So I'm in the report here going through some of the significant issues. I'm going to move on to page Roman numeral 2 here. And there's something that's called the net pension liability, and that's a number that's reported and also will be put on each employer's balance sheet. And this is just the difference between the total pension liability and the plan's fiduciary net position. Now, the plan's fiduciary net position, that's just the fancy word for the plan's market value of assets. So if you take the total pension liability, subtract off the plan's fiduciary net position, you get the net pension liability. So the net pension liability, that's just very similar to an unfunded liability on a market value basis. That's basically what that number is. And as of December 31st, 2013, that number was $1.47 billion for the total plan. As of December 31st, 2014, it's decreased to about $1.2 billion, and that was mainly due to lower than expected salary increases during that year. And this number, since it's based on a market value basis, it could be very volatile each year. I mean, that $270 million change is not as big as changes I've seen on some clients. So this number, the NPL, it will be very volatile, and it will swing around because it is based on the market value of assets each year.
Is that the one main factor that will sway it that much?
That is the main factor. Mm-hmm. Much larger than any other factor. I mean, of course, it'll be affected by, salary increases greater or less than expected, cost of living adjustments to retirees greater or less than expected, or people living longer, stuff like that. But the assets will be by far the largest number that will swing that number around. Mm-hmm. So we measured the net pension liability as of December 31st, 2014. We collected the plan assets as of December 31st, 2014. But for the liabilities, we're allowed to use what's called a roll forward. So we went back to December 31st, 2013, and we rolled forward those liabilities to December 31st, 2014. That's a common practice used by many plans. So it's based on data as of a year before the measurement date, but the assets are as of the measurement date. There is an exhibit that I'll go through a little bit later. It wasn't a given that we could just use the 7.25 long-term earnings assumption as the discount rate. We had to pass this test. I will go through that when we get to that exhibit. And then also, there is some information in the back of this report that the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants, the AICPA, recommends that the plan report in the CAFR, it's information that's more related to GASB 68, employer financial reporting. So I will cover that a little bit, but your auditor and the AICPA recommend you put in the CAFR, and I understand that you guys have put that in the CAFR there. So we're going to move into the report here, Roman numeral 3, just a summary of key results here. Total pension liability, about $8.1 billion. Again, that's like an actual accrued liability. Plan fiduciary net position, that's the market value of assets, $6.9 billion. Subtract and get the net pension liability of about $1.2 billion. $1.2 billion there. Some other key summary results here, counts of people, assumptions, stuff like that. And as we move through this report, there's just, if you go into scroll a few pages to regular page one, there's just some information that is required to be reported in the required supplemental information in the CAFR, like plan description, who administers the plan, how it's managed, benefit provisions on page 2 of the report here, and 3, just summary of benefit provisions. And that goes on to page 4. And then on to page 5 here, some of the assumptions and the plan provisions we use to value the, to measure the total pension liability. Assumptions are the same as in as the annual funding valuation, with the exception, if you recall, we came here about a year ago. The discount rate, or the earnings assumption used for GASB purposes, it's net of investment expenses only. It's not net of administrative expenses. GASB mandated that that assumption be net of investment expenses only. But for your funding valuation, the assumption's net of investment and administrative expenses both. That's the only difference in the assumptions used to measure these liabilities.
Question.
Yep.
On the inflation rate, what's the basis for that? Is that a plug number? Is that based on a slice of time? What is that?
So, yeah, if you recall, every 3 years we review the economic assumptions, which include price inflation, which is what you're talking about here, which is 3.25 currently. We also review the investment return assumption and salary increases every 3 years. So in that study, we look at a few things. We look at historical inflation, which if you look at the historical moving averages over the last, 70, 80 years, that number is a little bit on the high side because in recent years, inflation has been pretty low. We also look at what the Social Security Administration, what their actuaries project. We also look at what the market, what your investment consultants may project. Those numbers are usually a little bit more on the low end. And we come up with an assumption. Now, we generally don't like to move in too big a steps, but that assumption has been coming down and is currently 3.25, and it's up for review next year.
Doesn't it seem high to you?
Well, remember that we're trying to predict inflation over 60 years, okay?
Well, I mean on a long-term basis. Based on other people's projections in a variety of industrial and other settings, the longer-term rate I see is closer to 2. Used for those purposes, for long-term planning and strategy and so on. So I'm looking at 3.25. Yeah. I'm wondering, doesn't it seem high to you?
Well, if you look at the market and you look at like a 30-year TIPS, Treasury Inflation Protected Bond or versus a 30-year Treasury bond without the inflation protection, you do come in around, the difference is around 2%. But that's a 30-year projection, and the market can change, like that. So we are projecting over longer term. We do, you know, there has been pressure on that assumption. We generally only move, you know, 0.25, maybe half increments. But we will be reviewing that assumption next year. And, you know, we may be recommending a decrease to possibly 3 or something like that. Mm-hmm. But we're also careful not to chase, you know, a 2% inflation. I mean, you know, if there's, you know, You just really can't know when you know, a bunch of inflation could pop up anyway also. So we got to be careful about that. So yeah,
true, but I mean, that, it seems to me that for as long as I can remember in recent times, for at least the last decade, you know, we've been in a very low to no real adjustment in real terms of inflation. We're just not seeing it. I mean, I have in my other life, I deal with a lot of contracts that where the pricing is geared to CPI, as some of you know, and that, you know, that result for them has been abysmal, to put it nicely, in terms of what kind of adjustments. So I'm looking at this number, and I can't reconcile that against the reality of at least the last decade.
Well, you're right. In the last decade, has been lower. Actual experience has been lower. Now, this assumption used to be 4%, so we have substantially lowered it. But we're also careful not to just chase. I mean, we don't know the next 10 years for sure. Yes, we have been in a low inflation environment. I would agree with that. Mm-hmm.
John, let's say we reduced it to 2%, which I concur in certainly modern times seems to be a natural number. What impact would that have on our results?
So that is a building block. That is one of the components that goes into the investment return assumption. So all things being equal, if you lower the inflation by, you know, 1% or more, that would lead to a 1% or more decrease in the investment return assumption or discount rate. And when we lower the investment return assumption, generally that leads to increased costs. I mean, there is some reduction from the inflation component, reducing salaries, but lowering the investment return assumption, that will increase total pension liability and net pension liability substantially. Mm-hmm. Okay. On page 6 here, there's some other disclosure information. These are the target allocation and the long-term expected real rates of return that were used to derive the 7.25 earnings assumption that was adopted by the board 2 years ago. So this table will generally stay the same for every 3 years because this is what was used in deriving that assumption. Moving on to page 7 here, there's also some information that GASB wanted disclosed concerning the sensitivity in the discount rate. This gets to the question that was just raised a little bit. If currently discount rate 7.25, net pension liability about $1.2 billion, this shows what happens if we were to just solely raise or lower that assumption. This does not mean we'd be changing the inflation assumption, but just the discount rate assumption. So 1% increase or decrease in the discount rate, as you can see here, has a big impact on the results because changes the total pension liability. Of course, your assets don't change, so the rest must flow to the net pension liability here. Page 8, this is summary of changes in the total pension liability, summary of changes in the plan fiduciary net position, the assets. That information is just from your financial statements, the asset information. And at the top, the total pension liability, again, service cost, that's like a normal cost, interest cost, that's interest on the total pension liability, it's 7.25%. Have benefit payments and so on here. So this page shows how we get to the net pension liability from 1 year to the next. Page 9, 10, just some other summary information about actual contributions and the actual determined contributions. You've made them each year, so they've been equal. Then on page 11, so we needed to do this projection here. we needed to project out the benefit payments. That's column C over the for the current plan members, and those go out over 100 years, as you can see in column C. They start from 2014. They go out over last year's 21, 27. That's the last benefit payment. This is what we call a closed group projection. No new members. So even without any new members coming in, benefit payments would be projected to be made over the next 100 years. What we needed to do was basically make sure that column A, the assets, are bigger than the benefit payments each year. And this proves that that holds true, and it should, because your plan has a funding policy, and each year the actuarially determined contribution is made, and the plan is not projected to run out of money or anything like that. So based on this, we can use a 7.25 as the long-term earnings assumption. So that really covers the GASB 67 information. This is information that goes in your plan's financial statement, your CAFR. There are two more exhibits here, I think. There's a lot of numbers in them. And basically, there's two exhibits that the AICPA, again, the Accounting Institute, recommended the plan disclosing the CAFR, and you guys have done that. It allocates the NPL, the net pension liability, to each of the employers. How we did that is we basically looked at compensation for each of the employers in each of the cost groups, and we used that as the basis to allocate the net pension liability. And just to kind of get at some of the summary numbers, page 24, that shows the ending net pension liability allocation to each of the employers. For example, the county, they're allocated $807 million of the $1.2 billion net pension liability. That's about 67.5%. And the other employers are on there also. On Exhibit B, again, more information by employer. We get into, again, this is more GASB 68, which we will be preparing a comprehensive GASB 68 report for the employers. This was just to get those two schedules into your CAFR. There's deferred inflows, deferred outflows. I mean, a deferred inflow, that's like a gain that you have not recognized in your pension expense yet. A deferred outflow, that's a loss that you haven't recognized in your pension expense yet. Again, we'll get into more detail on this when we get more into the GASB 68 report. So this is, again, financial reporting. Information goes in your CAFR, and ultimately each of the employers will be reporting a lot of this information on their financial statements. So that concludes my presentation. Open up to any more questions.
Is this standard for all pension plans, or is it very, are you following like a template when you do this?
Generally, yes. I mean, there's certain things that GASB wants disclosed, and they even kind of give you a little model. But yes, for any public sector plans, we're preparing a report very similar to this one.
Mm-hmm. Other than Siegel, if I looked at another county, would I see a similar layout?
You would see similar types of information being shown in the report, I think. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Going beyond Gabe's question, and based on your professional experience and what you've seen so far, are there, and this is our early experience with GASB 67,
right,
do you see any yellow lights, red lights, or by comparison to other plans, did you see something that was an aha moment for you?
No, not necessarily. I think, I mean, in your plan, you know, I've seen some plans, again, their net pension liability, like we spoke a little bit earlier, was swinging around quite a bit. I mean, since your return during the 14 year was near the assumption, I think your return was a little bit above, on market value basis, a little bit above the 7.25 assumption. We didn't see that wild swing in that net pension liability. But, you know, in a year where you earn 18 or a year when you earn zero, that number, it's going to swing around by hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. So,
let me just ask, we're about 85% of our determined past service liability and market value. How does that compare in your direct experience with other 37 Act plans?
I would say it's my recollection is it's better than a lot of them. You know, I've seen some that are, I mean, the lowest is probably in the 60s or so. I'm trying to think of any that are maybe higher. There may be one or two that I can think of that are higher. You know, part of it has to do with your 18-year amortization period. It's, you know, some plans use a little bit longer amortization period, so shorter amortization period. That will help get you back to 100% funded quicker.
Some of it obviously has to do with the discount rate, and we are on the lower end.
That's a good point.
Using a higher liability.
That's right.
Yet we're still better funded. So
yep.
On balance, we're holding our own in our peer group.
That's a good point. Not everything's comparable. You're using a more conservative discount rate. So on that basis, you know, other plans may be using a more aggressive discount rate and show a higher funded percentage, but that's not necessarily comparable. Right.
Mm-hmm. Want to end it on that note?
Yes.
Stop right there.
Sorry.
I can
ask a question?
Sure.
Jackie Larekovich with the Contra Costa County Fire Protection District. So did I hear you say that the net pension liability was very similar to the UAAL?
On a market value basis.
So there is going to be a difference.
Well, as compared to an actuarial value basis, there will be a difference, yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. Any other questions? John, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. And moving on to